Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
All right, well, you've probably heard about the fact that I'm having my latest book, The Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is available right now. Now, of course, you can buy it from Amazon, but if you want the best deal possible, what you're going to want to do is buy it from me by texting DocBook, that's DocBook, that's one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or, of course, you can go to the website, which is drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, I'm offering all kinds of bonuses with this. Make sure to check out the website, send the text, and we'll shoot you right over so you can check it out. Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Today, we're doing another monthly fireside chat with a physician to get to know their journey, their joys, and their struggles with finances and outside of finances. And today, I am excited with our next guest. He is a fellow podcaster, and he is someone on the edge of a movement, Direct Primary Care, DPC. And he has a podcast about it, and he's a physician, and his name is Landon Roussel. Welcome, Landon.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to be here. We're doing a little bit you're on my podcast, I'm on your podcast, and I was telling you beforehand that it is always so fun to be able to meet people beforehand. I'm curious, with your podcast, Landon, have the DPC podcast focused on direct primary care, who's been some of your favorite people that you've had the chance to connect with?
I tell you what, the funnest episode that we just did was with my own audio master. I have an audio master who does most of the editing for the podcast, and we did an episode together. He's actually a radio show host, and so we went into the studio and recorded an episode together on what goes on behind the scenes. So that was a lot of fun. But in general, our guests are, you know, come either direct primary care doctors or people from within the direct primary care movement, be it insurance people, be it people in public policy, be it even from time to time patients, and, you know, learning how can we play a part in this movement to restore healthcare and make primary care more direct, make insurance what it needs to be doing, which is insurance for rare things, and to really support the doctor-patient relationship so that doctors can do what they do best and patients can have time and attention from their doctor and get what they need, you know, to live a healthy life.
Love it. No, that's fantastic. And I think we'll have to talk about your podcast a little bit more later, but I think what's great about your show is you have very short bites where it's easy for someone to listen to on a commute, 15, 20 minutes, give a little something to think about and move on.
Yeah. Well, the point is to, you know, to help people learn how they can become a part, because as you know, this crisis that we're facing in healthcare is causing our, you know, serious problems for the country, for national debt, for wage stagnation, for people's overall satisfaction with the healthcare system. And we all have a part to play in fixing this. And the point that we try to drive home is that direct primary care is central to that, because every other country you go to, a strong primary care system has shown to improve value and lower costs. And we don't have that principally because of our payment model. And we think this is the payment model that allows primary care to be good at what it's supposed to be.
Love it. Love it. So I want to rewind the clock a little bit and talk about your journey of being a physician. So first, tell us a little bit, Landon, where did you grow up?
Grew up in Louisiana and Texas. More Texas than Louisiana, but my family is from Louisiana, so we'd sort of always come there for holidays or summertime. And I went to college in Houston, Texas at Rice University, and then was fortunate enough to get into Cornell Medical College in New York City.
That was a big change.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a jump, a little bit less space in medical school. I think my first year of medical school, I was in some dorms that have since been teared down, if I understand correctly, and it was probably about a 70 to 80 square foot room. That was my that was my first year medical school living quarters.
But, and growing up in Louisiana and Houston, I'm picturing in my mind a big table with a boil done of all the crawfish and all of those kinds of things. Was that the kind of thing that happened in your family from time to time?
Oh yeah. Every spring, you know, you got to have crawfish. And we, I was actually, you know, thinking about this morning, because my practice is not far from where we would go to a river camp, which was a thing and still is a thing around this area. People go and stay at little cabins along the river. We'd go to the river camp and eat crawfish along the river.
Nice.
You know, on a table covered with newspapers, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's great. So tell me about growing up in Louisiana and in Houston. What kind of money influence were you having? Tell me about your folks and some of the things you observed about money growing up.
Well, that's a very interesting question, because you know you don't think about that a lot. You know, as you when you get older, you just kind of act, you know, almost reflexively, but it's definitely influenced the way you handle finances. My parents were always very fiscally responsible, but one of the main differences between, you know, where they were and where I am is that, you know, my dad was an engineer and always employed by a company. So he sort of had to dealt with a fixed income, and we always had enough. But so when I realized that I did not want to, you know, be an employed physician, I had to learn very quickly how to deal with being a small business owner and having to rely on major fluctuations, relatively significant fluctuations from month to month in how much I earn. So that's, I think, one of the differences that I think about whenever I think back to childhood.
Did you have a physician? Your dad was an engineer. Did you have a physician relative, or?
Well, I had a neighbor who was a physician. He was probably the closest physician, and he was actually a brain surgeon. And one thing I think that was interesting about thinking about influence of finances on my behaviors now, and you know, this has been a learning curve as a physician, you know, especially as an attending for the past 2 years, is that the money stream for physicians in the past decades has significantly dried up. And I don't think that's, you know, much of a secret, but whereas, you know, even back when I was a teenager, 15, 20 years ago, insurance companies and Medicare were much more generous and less stringent on how they doled out the money. And that has definitely, I think, changed in the past 20 years. Just healthcare expenses have gone up, and utilization has gone up. And so I definitely saw a fair number of physicians that I knew, either friends, parents, or neighbors, who they were able to live on, you know, fairly fairly high incomes, and I think they were probably higher than relatively than what they are today for physicians. I mean, physicians' salaries or physician pay relative to inflation has not grown substantially in some time.
Right.
And so I think that influenced me a lot. And, thinking that, you know, once I get out, it's all going to be taken care of, you know, the finding the money will just come easily. And also, you know, I saw a lot of my classmates when I went into medical school, very, very free in how they spent their loan money. And I guess I made the assumption, you know, maybe not the kind of foresight that I have now, that that it would just, the money would just come once you're a physician, and that you would just have access to it, without too much restraint. I mean, relative restraint, but those are a couple things that definitely influenced the way I sort of came into this. How I looked at things coming into this.
So you went to your undergrad at Rice, you went to your medical school at Cornell, and talk me through the debt part of the journey as you get into residency.
That was interesting. I had a little bit of loans from undergrad. I mean, in the scheme of things, not that much, and probably have paid those off now. Not too far out of residency. I did have a fair amount from medical school, and that's mainly because I went to med school in New York, and it's expensive to live in New York. Mm-hmm. And I got support. I got lots of scholarships in undergrad, and then I got financial support in medical school, but it still wasn't enough to cover the full amount plus living expenses. So I had well over $200,000 whenever I came out of medical school. I was fortunate enough, though, to get a primary care loan from the federal government. The only stipulation was that I practice primary care within the United States or the 50 states or one of the territories of the U.S. And that was the only stipulation. And if I did that, my interest rate would stay at 5%.
Oh, wow.
And nice. Not only would it stay at 5%, but they would pay the interest of the loan while I was in residency or any postgraduate training that was approved.
What was the name of that program, in case there are some medical students listening?
It was the primary care loan. I think that's what it's called, primary care loan. And it's offered, it depends, the schools... Every school gets a certain amount, and it just so happened that at Cornell, which is a heavily specialist school, they didn't have enough people to fill it.
Wow.
So I got that, and so that's been helpful. So it put me, as soon as I got out, it put me on the 10-year repayment track, and I'm happy to make those payments, because 10 years out of medical school being done with that, I'm okay with.
Well, you've probably saved yourself with that program. I would guess, you know, when you look at medical school plus residency and compounding interest, that's probably 20 grand when you add that all up.
Yeah. Well, as I told you earlier, I'm in the process of transitioning to a less expensive, you know, essentially mortgage-free place to live, some land that we own. And once we're, you know, I have a few more smaller loans from medical school on top of that, but those are payable relatively quickly.
Let's fill in everyone on that conversation, because we weren't recording the podcast when we were talking about that offline. And so you had mentioned that you had to me before the interview that you had bought a condo. And now you're looking at selling it, and you're building with cash on a piece of land, and you're going to make sure you have no debt on it. So first, I would love to know, when did you buy the condo? Was that in residency?
Or? No, as soon as I moved out of, or as soon as I finished residency, we came down here, and I had started out at the same time as starting my practice, I was doing hospitalist work at a big hospital, but I was technically employed full-time at the hospital, so I was making a full-time salary. I quickly realized that being an employed physician was something I never want to do, ever. Mm-hmm. I'd rather drive Uber or host Airbnb or do anything but be an employed physician.
And why was that for you? So tell me more about why. What was it being about employed physician that you would rather be an Uber driver than be an employed physician?
Well, it affects your, unfortunately affects your clinical decision making when you're having, you're having so many factors constrained by a system that's very dysfunctional. I found it very frustrating having to pick up pieces from people not having primary care doctors, people coming in with uncontrolled diabetes because they didn't get access to a primary care doctor. It was very troubling to me not to be able to be that person's doctor in the clinic. Beyond that, you're doing a lot of things that are sort of for just the well-being of things that take control from you in a way that doesn't really allow you to be the person you want to be. I can think of an example that for some unknown reason, I mean, I guess I can theorize some reasons, they would make us, our contract stipulated that we had to clock in at 6 a.m. and clock out at 6 p.m. every day when we were on service. And even though we didn't have to do service 5 days a week, I mean, it was 14 days a month. That's still, I could get my work done from 9 to 5 and still get the same job done. But instead, I had to get there at this early hour and leave at this late hour and spend a lot of time not really doing a lot of work just because we had to be there. And that was kind of frustrating. Also in terms of like revenue stream, you see nothing of what, you see a little bit, that's not fair to say nothing, but what goes on with the revenue that you generate, and your billing is all handled by somebody else, and they sort of determine how that gets to your bank account and how much of it gets to your bank account. Did not like that. And they really do take a fair percentage off. Now, some hospitals, they say some hospitals, lose money on primary care doctors, which is not really true. They do make it up. They just can't bill directly for it, but you can do just as well being independent as you can be being owned. You just have to be comfortable and have thick skin to deal with the business owner issues of being a business owner.
So let me kind of get back to your story. So you start out with being a hospitalist as you transition to practice. You're not loving it. Did you buy a condo then in that time period as you were a hospitalist, or like? Yes,
exactly. And it was an expensive thing. I mean, we weren't frivolous about our purchase, but it was valuable. I think we spent about $450,000 on it. So it was, not inappropriate for our income range. But to really have the financial freedom that I want, I want to be able to not have to make monthly payments on my mortgage and, be able to have a much more flexible work schedule that doesn't require me to work more to be able to pay a monthly mortgage. So that when I realized that, it was pretty simple that, the next step was to build a place paying in cash. And we had already had this land for some time, but we hadn't been able to build on it yet, and this sort of turbocharged my efforts to get something livable there.
Interesting. So you end up selling your condo, and you end up leaving the hospital. When were those two events happen?
Well, the condo is not sold. It's up for sale. But it'll sell. I'm not worried about that. But I left the hospitalist job after about 6 months. It wasn't working out, and I had already, got things going to start a direct primary care practice. And that's sort of what I had envisioned doing anyways, getting out of medical school. That was really what kept me in clinical medicine to begin with. Hmm. So I started my direct primary care practice, around the same time as when I left the hospital, and it's been growing ever since.
So tell me about that moment. I mean, were you, on one hand, you were excited to start, I'm sure, but I have to imagine as you leave a salary job that you saw your dad have growing up, that had to be a scary moment. Tell me about what you were going through. And when you're looking at the fact I have a mortgage that you have to pay every month, sounds like you may be married. So maybe you could walk us through your spouse a little bit and what income and how the heck you were able to make it work.
Here's the deal. We've lived in very small quarters before. I mean, I've lived in New York in 70 square feet. We've lived in Europe in very small accommodations. We were happy there. And so I knew, the comfort of an income was much less important to me than being able to live the life that I wanted to live. And when I was getting to work and, looking at the clock to see when I wanted to go home, I remember listening to a book by Peter Thiel called Zero to One. Excellent book. And he said something along the lines of, if you're looking at the clock to see when you want to go home from work, and that's, that's what's driving you during the day, then you need to quit your job now. Mm. And that was my light bulb moment, if you will. And I just realized that is not the life I want to live. And so I need to make that change quickly. And however whatever needs to happen with finances, we'll make it work. I'll moonlight, I'll do other things, but I cannot live the life that I didn't go to medical school for this. And this was, no different, if not even more challenging than residency, in terms of the personal stress it put on me. So it is scary. It was scary, but it's worked out, and it's been a year and a half now, and it's worked out.
All right. Well, let's take a pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like some members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you've never had all this financial training during medical school, and you're just struggling with enough time to do it all. Well, my friend, over 2 years ago, I started on this journey of writing my next book. And it was a book for residents and fellows, and I reached out to a few potential authors, and Amanda Liu joined me on this journey. Finally, it is available, The Physician's Guide, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is packed with pretty much anything and everything you want to know as a young physician. Millionaire mindset, debt payoff, buying your first home, and contract negotiation. Now, of course, you can pick it up at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any major vendor. However, if you want the best deal possible, you are going to want to get it from me by texting DocBook, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. book. Now, why am I suggesting to do this? Well, it's because I am offering the sun, the moon, and the stars when you buy it directly from me. Because not only will you get a physical copy of the book, for only about $25, $24.95, you are going to get the following as a bonus. Of course, the physical copy of the book, an electronic copy of the book, an audio copy of my other book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, all of the episodes of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, over four seasons worth of material, and you're going to get an electronic copy of the newest edition of the Tax Reduction Prescriptions. And on top of that, you're going to get a whole new write-up on my journey in land investing. You're going to get exclusive content on that as I am going forward. My friends, this is over $100 retail of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to pick up this book and all the bonuses and get all that financial training that you've desired? You're going to get it from me by texting DocBook. Again, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or going to www.drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. To snag your copy now, text DocBook to 44222. Or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. And now, back to the show. So tell us, your podcast is focused on direct primary care and this model of having your own practice. One of our past podcast guests, Pamela Weibel, is, I don't know if she's part of DPC per se, but it's a sounds pretty similar in terms
she has a very it is sort of a direct primary care practice. We actually interviewed her on episode 20 of our podcast as well, talking about a different thing, but yeah, she doesn't have any insurance contracts anymore. I don't think she bills on a monthly fee, but she has no insurance contracts, so she's out of network with everyone and just charges cash.
And so what you do is you're not working with insurance companies either, right? It's
nope.
It's a flat monthly fee of $50 or $60 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
That you're charging for primary care. So tell us more about how that works. Like, how are you charging on a credit card, you know, on a monthly basis, or is it coming out?
It's all auto charged. So every month, you know, our patients get an auto bill that goes to their credit card for their monthly fee, which is based on age.
I know for my business, businesses that I have, you know, when you're charging a subscription model, it's a great way to have people know you don't have conflicts of interest. They know exactly what it's going to be. And you have some people who hardly use it at all. And you have other people who overutilize, and you have a lot of people kind of in the middle of the bell curve. Is it similar in medicine? And,
do you have to
adjust for people that overutilize? You know, how do you set that up?
We're advised not to say unlimited on our visits. And my contract specifically exclude the unlimited portion specifically because of that issue. But that said, I've never had somebody overutilize the point where I've charged them extra per visit.
Hmm. Interesting. And tell us about the challenges of building the business so far.
Well, that's a big challenge, and I'll tell you, I'm not alone in having, you know, and saying that the learning curve for marketing a direct primary care practice is a challenge, because people have become addicted to the insurance mentality. And the idea that a healthcare expense is automatically paid for by health insurance, which, you know, if you go back in the 1960s, 90% of payments for healthcare were not through insurance. They were out of pocket. Only 10% was paid for by the insurance or government.
Right.
Now we've got to the reverse situation where 90% or more of payments in healthcare are done via insurance or the government, and only 10% are out of pocket. So it's a dramatic shift in the payer demographics or the payer composition. So that's been a huge challenge for doctors to go back and say, wait a minute, everything we bill, you pay directly. And then on top of that, to say, not only do you pay directly, but you pay every month. People are just not used to that. People don't bat an eye to pay an iPhone subscription, you know, 60, 70 bucks a month. But a primary care doctor is, for many people, just seems excessive. But that's part of the mind frame, the mentality shift that we're working to change, because we know that our type of practice saves money overall for the system. When people come see us, they go to the ER less, they go to the hospital less, they use specialists less, and they get more satisfaction with their care. So overall, it's a beneficial arrangement for the patient, and then the physician has more time and a regular income to expect. But that said, it's not a common model, and insurance companies have been slow to adjust their plans. So a lot of insurance plans, you know, cost a lot of money now and don't include this or even cover it as a reimbursable or as a billable health expense. And so a lot of people are stuck paying on top of their insurance plan for this kind of thing. So it's a challenge to market oneself, but we've really got our got ourselves rolled up our sleeves and, you know, got our hands dirty and done the work to market ourselves, and it's come to fruition.
Now let's talk through some numbers, because, you know, I'm a numbers geek, right? So we got to talk some numbers here. So let's say you're billing someone $50 a month and you're just starting out in building your practice, right?
Yeah.
If you have 100 people, your revenue is $5,000 a month. So to get from like 1 to 100, for example, where obviously that's not a great wage for a physician to have 100 patients, for example, on a monthly basis. But let's just work with 0 to 100. Like, where are you officing? You know, what is the cost? Because you have to see patients somewhere, right? Or are you going to their house?
That's a good question.
Like, I'm just trying
to picture
in my mind.
The revenue, the amount that overhead would cost, they say for a clinic. I mean, some say about 200 patients is what it costs to run a full clinic. Mm. Now, there's a lot of variables there, and one thing that I've learned is that you can run a practice for very little. And in fact, we did for, you know, some time. We had just me as an office staff and the everything. And, you know, we were very, very minimal in terms of expenses. As we've gotten more patients, we've hired more and accepted more expenses.
You're saying we, who's we? So it's not just you, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say my wife and I, but because she was sort of helping me for a little while, and now we have, you know, two office managers who are very good, so, you know, 200 patients will probably get you the coverage of overhead you need. I'd say, you know, at ballpark range of dollars, $10,000. Is probably a ballpark range for overhead for a clinic. A lot of that depends on real estate and what's a typical fair wage for, say, a medical assistant, or if you want to go for a nurse or an office manager, something like that. That may vary a little bit by region, but whatever the case, if you want to have a full-fledged clinic, I think $10,000 is reasonable. You can probably make it for as low as 7,000 or 8,000, but you're going to have to be doing some work.
So what did you do then? What did you do to start out? Like, where were you seeing patients?
Oh, I moonlighted and paid my rent and out of that, and paid for all my expenses until we started making enough to pay it ourselves.
So you were, your business was having to run negative cash flow, it sounds like, then, starting out.
Yeah. Probably for the first 6 months to a year.
Wow. And so, you broke even then within
about a year,
and you were having to do locums and moonlighting to pay the bills. And so how much time were you spending in your practice then versus moonlighting in that first year?
It's a good question. I wasn't spending as much moonlighting as I was in my practice, but I say I probably spent 40 the first year. Oh man, I probably spent 50 plus hours a week in the practice and about on average 10 to 15 moonlighting. So I was probably working 60, 70 hour weeks.
So it wasn't,
now
it wasn't
probably scaled it.
Interesting. Yeah, I was imagining you were doing like 40 hours a week moonlighting and like 10 or 20 in the practice or something.
No, and that, now I probably still do as much moonlighting, but then I also I work a little bit less in the practice. I probably do 35 to 40 hours a week in the practice.
Huh. Interesting. And so once you get to this 200 patients then that you're seeing, like from then on, I guess it's just scale, right? So where did you get patients? How did you go about the process of spreading word about
what you're doing? I say number one is personal networking, just leveraging people who know you and believe in you, and then having them spread it. But we also joined business groups that, business networking groups. Those were huge, and we still get a lot of people from those. So business networking groups and personal networking was number one. And then we did pay some good money to get a good website, and that helped a lot, actually. So we do get a lot of online referrals, had and still do get a fair number of online referrals. So those are probably the top two or top three that we did. And then there's all kind of things. I still go on the radio once a month. I got a few patients from the radio station. So
it sounds like just lots of different efforts is really what led to the practice growing and then a lot of referrals. Is that what I'm kind of reading into how the practice has continued to grow?
Yeah. It's really been, right now we're sort of just relying on, person to person referral from our base. I mean, we're at almost 400 now, so I'm kind of at near my max anyways.
So what happens at that point, Landon? You have 400 patients now. Do you start?
Close your doors. Well, I mean, most people want to go to 600 or 700. I personally don't, because I have other things that I like to do, like podcasting. And, I also deal with a lot of elderly sick people, which I like, and they take up a little more time. But once you get to your limit, then you it's time to, you responsibly, you either shut the doors or you take somebody else on.
Do you raise prices? Is that a strategy?
You could. That's not reasonable. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, at that point, right, you can start increasing your margins, which is the beautiful thing. If people like the model, which you lose some, but then if you're at capacity, you have room for it. I love it.
Absolutely.
Well, congratulations. You're right there, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's work, but it's far better than being a physician that where you're not able to do what you went to medical school to do. And unfortunately, more and more doctors find themselves in that place.
Absolutely. Well, I'd love to know, with where you're at now, how are you defining financial freedom? What does that mean to you?
I think being debt free is probably number one, like you said. And then two is being able to do what you want without having to rely solely on income rely more or less exclusively on income as a determinant of whether that's what you have to do. so that you can do things that are meaningful to you, like supporting your local community or being with your family more, all kind of great things that we could spend our time on that sometimes we aren't able to because of financial constraints.
I love it. I love it. It's a great answer. So here's the where you gotta put the pedal to the metal then is, how are you tracking your progress towards that then?
I think that's a great question. I think we just go by milestones. You know, this week the milestone was we got our house frame up.
All right.
Next week the milestone is going to be this week the milestone is that we're going to be the plumbing and the electrical up, and the house, the frame is going to pass inspection. So that's my milestone. It's paid for and it's past inspection. And then as I move along, you know, having different loans paid off or et cetera.
Well, let's keep talking about that. So you have the house built now. Yeah. So let's say that's a milestone down. So then what are the next few milestones you see for yourself?
Have the house sold, have our condo sold. Mm-hmm. Having our student loan paid off, that's pretty much it.
What about after that?
After that, I think I'll have more freedom to take more time with my my family, spend more time with my kids, take more afternoons off, those kind of things.
And what about ultimately, you know, that elusive retirement goal, you know, the ultimate financial freedom?
Retirement is a tough term for me because I don't know if I'll ever do that in that way. I find work gives meaning to my life, and I want to be able to do that. But I, you know, there's a lot of work that doesn't get paid that provides value to society. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that I could do that don't get paid. Member of a fraternal organization. I don't know if you heard of the Knights of Columbus,
yes.
But I'm a member of Knight of Columbus, and my council needs a financial secretary. Well, I don't really have time to do that now, but at some point I will.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'd love to know, Landon, if you step back into the past and you're talking to a Landon that's a first-year resident, if you could sit down and talk with him, what advice would you give to yourself?
That's a great question. Probably one, take it easier. Number two, you can get by with a lot less, especially when you're building a business. And number three is be wary of people trying to take advantage of doctors, because unfortunately I've seen that too many times.
And what's your best advice on how to avoid that?
Fortunately, you have to be as keen as possible when you're making, you know, deals with people, and unfortunately you got to be very specific about what your terms are and what you get out of any sort of collaboration or partnership.
I love it. No, good question to ask. Well, any other closing thoughts, Landon, you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I think that it's definitely challenging for many with direct primary care to see how it fits into the solution as a whole, especially when we've been told so many different things. But at the heart of it, direct primary care is really just about helping doctors and patients have the relationship that they've had for thousands of years, and just simplifying that. And I think if you let doctors be doctors, patients be patients, hospitals be hospitals, insurance companies be insurance companies, we'll all be happier and have a much more satisfying healthcare system.
I love it. I love it. Great thought. And where can people check out your podcast and find out more about you?
So you can go to my website, thedpcpodcast.com. And you can also you can type in direct primary care on iTunes, and it'll come up among the top results. So That's probably the two ways to reach me. I also, my email's easy, thedpcpodcast@gmail.com. So that's it.
There you go. All right, folks. Well, there you go, Landon. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right, my friends. Well, that wraps it up for today. Landon had a really fantastic journey, learning so much about starting a practice from scratch. It's like turning back the clock 50 years. I love it. I think it's great. And I would say that there's no better way to create wealth than to have your own business and have so many of the opportunities that Landon has in front of him, whether he buys the building that he practices in, or he sells his practice down the line, or something like that in the future. This is a really exciting opportunity. I'm excited to see it unfold for him and see what happens from there. And so, my friends, this is it for today. I would love to hear from you. What did you think about the podcast? What would you like to be a guest and share your story? Make sure to contact me, Dave, at drfreedompodcast.com. And of course, I would be eternally grateful if you could take just a few minutes to go on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you hear this podcast and do a quick review, and then a written review would be wonderful. I would really appreciate it because it helps more and more physicians become aware of the podcast. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a red lifestyle. All right, my friends. Well, that was the show for today. I hope you loved it. And I just want to give you one more reminder. My newest book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life, is available right now. $25. You get the sun, the moon, the stars, all kinds of bonuses, $100 worth of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to go and pick this book up? If so, you're going to want to get it from me and get all those bonuses by texting DocBook, that's DocBook, to 44222, or going to the website drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Again, snag your copy now by texting DocBook, that's all one word, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook.